Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, it is a topic that has generated strong reaction wherever it's come up. Findlay Planning and Zoning Committee Chair Heather Kensinger discusses the framework on zoning rules for data centers that will be presented to City Council next week. Also this morning, the America 250 celebration continues, with August being designated Ohio Goes to the Fair Month, just in time for the state's annual exposition. And we have a special collection of recipes specifically for zucchini season from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, July 31st, 2026. Did you see the video of the house explosion in Canton yesterday morning? It was a gas explosion, completely obliterated this house. And actually, I heard a report that said it knocked neighboring houses off their foundation. It was like a bomb went up. They felt it like 2 miles away. And it was like 4 a.m., 4 o'clock in the morning yesterday. That'll wake you up. There was a security camera, ring doorbells and ring cameras in the neighboring houses, and it showed this thing blowing up. Just incredible video. Amazing. It was a gas explosion, yeah. It was crazy. That'd be a heck of a way to wake up, wouldn't it? Let's see what's going on here this morning. Governor DeWine says this is a story that we've been following, obviously impacts Findlay, not to the same degree as, say, Springfield. But Governor DeWine says there is no immigration enforcement surge planned in Ohio right now with the expiration of temporary protected status for Haitian immigrants. He shared the update, was it yesterday, day before yesterday? Anyway, this week he said he has heard from federal officials who have confirmed that there are no raids in the works at this point. Which, if you believe that that is the case, or are they just being coy about that? We don't know. I guess we'll find out. Obviously, as we know, hundreds, thousands of Haitian immigrants across the country, including many living in Springfield, also in the central Ohio region, and in Findlay, lost their legal residency in the U.S. earlier this week, or was it last week? Anyway, the temporary protected status expired. That was canceled. The governor has publicly opposed any plans to deport those Haitian nationals living in Ohio, but he said state officials will obey federal law. So we'll wait and see, but apparently there is no big enforcement surge planned. So. Let's see. A few other items here of interest. Fall sports going to be getting underway here soon. NFL, high school football, college football, and the NHL season, which we think of hockey as a winter sport, but it actually begins in the fall and continues into the spring, actually. It's an incredibly long season, but single game tickets for the Columbus Blue Jackets go on sale this morning, beginning at 10 a.m. Through the CBJ app and website and at Ticketmaster.com. The Jackets open the season at home against Buffalo. The Blue Jackets and the Sabres on October 5th. So just want to mention that. Single game tickets go on sale this morning if you're a hockey fan. Speaking of sports, if you have ever taken a sip of a Coors Light and wished that you could get that same flavor in the form of a cracker, you are in luck. Cheez-It Coors Light Beer Cheese Crackers are here just in time for tailgating season. The company says they will be available for a limited time. It is the first beer brand partnership in Cheez-It history. And the company reminds consumers that the product does not contain any alcohol. It does not actually contain any alcohol, but Cheez-It Coors Light beer cheese crackers. Look for those on your store shelves for your fall tailgate parties. Okay. I thought this was really interesting from the health file. Do you have one of those fitness trackers, a smartwatch with a fitness tracker? And have you ever wondered just how accurate it actually is? I've wondered this because I have one of these smartwatches, and I'm not an exercise freak by any stretch, but I do like to monitor, you know, how much activity that I'm getting, and track my sleep occasionally. I don't do it every night, but I, you know, try and occasionally track my sleep just to kind of get an idea of how well I'm sleeping, so on and so forth. And I've often wondered how accurate is that information that your smartwatch is feeding back to you. Well, a sports medicine doctor is offering some advice on fitness trackers, with so many of them out there. Michael Dakic, I think is how you pronounce it, D-A-K-K-A-K, Michael Dakic at the Cleveland Clinic says, studies show only 11% of the devices that are commercially available have been validated for even a single metric. That's important to know. Only 11% have actually been validated that they can actually track any single metric, let alone all of the different ones that they claim to track. I mean, they claim to track your heart health and signs of, you know, heart issues and all of that. So basically, he's saying take this information with a grain of salt. He says, generally speaking, the step counts and the heart rate trackers seem to be fairly accurate, but others, like the number of calories burned and the ones with sleep-related information, those are much less accurate. So make of that what you will, but I thought it was interesting if you have one of those fitness trackers on your smartwatch, as I do. I'm wondering about that. Let's see. Speaking of medical information, this is amazing science. And really great for the animal world. Scientists in Texas have reached a historic milestone, developing the world's first mRNA elephant vaccine to combat a fast-acting and lethal virus that I guess has been spreading in the elephant population. In findings released this week, scientists and researchers at Baylor College of Medicine, working in conjunction with the Houston Zoo, report that two young elephants at the Cincinnati Zoo avoided severe illness after being exposed to this virus that has been known to be lethal. And these elephants at the Cincinnati Zoo did not even get seriously sick, because they have had this new vaccine that they have developed. This has been a 15-year project to eradicate this virus or find a vaccine for it. It began when the Houston Zoo lost an elephant calf about 15 years ago to this virus, and they said we have to figure out a way to fix this, because not only is there the concern about this virus spreading in zoo populations, but in the wild, where African and Asian savanna elephants face extinction and African forest elephants face even greater danger. So you know, these are endangered creatures in the wild, and now they got to figure out. I mean, obviously, it's easy to administer a vaccine for a virus among the population of elephants in zoos. Not very easy to deploy a vaccine in the wild. Now they're trying to figure out how they can do that to eliminate this virus. Fascinating stuff. Elephant vaccines. That's something I didn't have on my radar screen, is something that I would be interested in. But I saw that story on the Newswire and Interesting, especially the Ohio tie-in with those young elephants at the Cincinnati Zoo that were exposed, kind of naturally exposed, I guess, to this virus and did not have any ill effects. So, cool. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Here's another amazing application of these GLP-1 medications. I mean, these things, I you can't describe them as anything other than a miracle drug at this point. I mean, they were developed to address diabetes symptoms or diabetes issues, and then they have expanded to for use people to lose weight and have been incredibly effective for that. And now they say women who have struggled with infertility are sharing stories about becoming pregnant after taking GLP-1s. Oh, wasn't there the story that it impacted memory issues, that it helped stave off dementia, Alzheimer's, and all of that? There's some research that support. I think I read that. And now, fertility issues. Health experts say GLP-1 drugs may improve fertility for some women by addressing conditions like obesity and insulin resistance, but results vary from person to person. Doctors are urging women to talk to their healthcare providers before using these medications, especially because some carry warnings about birth control interactions. So it's not necessarily a miracle, and I guess it makes sense if some people who have been, you know, who are extremely overweight or obese have infertility side effects from all of that. This would certainly address those issues by extension, but they are not necessarily in and of themselves fertility drugs. Nonetheless, it appears that there is some cause and effect there. Just amazing, amazing stuff. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started here.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Republican U.S. Representative Max Miller has come under fire amid allegations of domestic abuse by his ex-wife, who's also the daughter of Republican U.S. Senator Bernie Moreno. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine weighed in on the matter, saying that while the allegations were of concern to him, the choice to retain Miller should be left to the voters. The National Guard confirms that 14 Ohio National Guard soldiers were hospitalized for smoke inhalation during field training as a result of the Canadian wildfires. Training has been suspended for vulnerable personnel. In Southwest Ohio, concerns that a recent construction fire at the forthcoming $160 million Farmer Music Center next to Riverbend would delay its opening have been addressed, with contractors saying the 20,000-seat venue will open as scheduled next spring. The Ohio Nurses Association is requesting an expanded Department of Justice antitrust review of Ohio Health for allegedly creating rural healthcare deserts. A new report indicates out-of-state corporate investors are aggressively buying out unpaid property tax debts in an attempt to legally acquire property on the cheap through foreclosure. Over 1,800 kayakers and canoers will participate in the Cincinnati Paddle Fest to break the Guinness Book of World Records for largest paddling party in the U.S. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Get a recap of all the day's news from across the state.
ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
Haley Kirby reporting in downtown Toledo.
From the State House, Kevin Landers.
ONN Canton.
ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland explains.
In Marietta, Brett Wharf, ONN News.
Emma Henderson in Genoa.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Listen at onnradio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts from the Ohio News Network.
Well, our cover story this morning, you'll recall several weeks back when the city imposed a 12-month moratorium on data center development in Findlay, pending a review of zoning regulations on these types of facilities. That job fell to the Zoning and Planning Committee, and now they have a framework to present to the full council for their consideration at this coming Tuesday's meeting. Heather Kinzinger is chair of that committee, and Heather, I have to admit, I was a bit surprised that you already have this framework completed, and I can hear probably a fair number of people saying, what's the rush? We have this 1 year moratorium in place. We may not be able to prevent a data center from being built here forever, but we can prohibit them from for a year. We should hold them off as long as we can.
I mean, that's a good possibility still. So where we're at right now is I call the merry-go-round a little bit. So when we do something in planning and zoning, when we establish language that we want, and we recommend it go back for a finalization, so it gets back to the administration, to the law director, they go back through everything, it gets put on our agenda, but it gets put on our agenda as a council as a whole, where we're going to refer it back to planning commission and planning and zoning again. So we're going to refer it back to those two again. It's not going to get read or voted on in council. It's just going to get referred back. And it's going to go, what I say, on their merry-go-round, back around in a circle, back to us. And then we'll review it, probably not at the August planning and zoning. Planning commission may, but we'll be looking at it in the September planning and zoning.
We are actually hearing some rumblings that developers want to put a data center in our community. Now, for months, we've heard that this is not necessarily an urgent issue per se, that we've not been approached as a data center site. And now it appears that there is some urgency. Is that the case?
None that we are privy to. So as far as what developers are deciding or sales that may be having, we don't know any of that personally as council. So it's nothing that's going on. As far as we can see, all we're trying to do is establish a good framework that protects the citizens. We don't have the option, as much as people would like us to. We could put a moratorium. We can stop it for a period of time, but we cannot permanently say no to a type of business. Mm-hmm. When we do that, we open our city up to some legal ramifications called taking of property rights, and we can be sued. And I can think of a lot of better ways to spend city money than defending us against a lawsuit that we could have prevented had we written things correct.
Yeah. So just to clarify, there is nothing about the possibility of a data center coming that has expedited this at all in any way.
No, it's something that we've been working on for a while. If you go back through planning committee, when we put the moratorium in place, then we knew we had to start working on language. So we've been working on language since the end of April through May, June, July. It's back and forth, right? We look at it, we suggest things that need edited, the law director reviews it, the administration, the planning, something that comes back to us. That's what we've been doing.
A fair point that this actually was being discussed even before the formal moratorium was put in place. So talk a little bit about the process of the past few weeks in putting the framework that you have now and putting this together. I mean, can kind of take us through how you went about this task, how the sausage was made, if you will.
So I think we approached it when we started. There was a couple of ways you could approach it. And we were asked by Matt Cordonia, helps with, he's head of Hancock Regional Planning. He helps with some of the language in the framework, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then legal, obviously, Director Feiner steps in and helps with some of the legal language. And we work through it. So there was things that we wanted. You can make one that's very permissive. You can make one that's in the middle. You can make a version that's very restrictive and have some really tight safeguards. And the more we've dug into it, I think you'll see, even if people want to take time to go back and look at the options that were available back in April versus the ones today, you can see how we restricted more and more and just made it very concise in how we wanted it. So we wanted to make sure that we were protecting property owners. We wanted to make sure that noise was not an issue. We wanted to make sure that setbacks were happening. Just an example, if you're standing inside the Starbucks on Tiffin Avenue, the decibel level of cars driving by is, I think, what they said was in the low 80s. Mm-hmm. What we're asking is for a data center, if one is built at the edge of their property line, it should be no more than 65 decibels. So we're asking for less noise coming from that building than cars driving down a thoroughfare.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things that we're trying to be very clear about so that there's no question.
And you were touching on this as one of the other questions that I wanted to ask, because I think this is one of the other things that people wonder about, is who was consulted on what these rules should look like. I mean, a policy can look very different if it's drafted with the input of those who are in favor of this kind of development versus the input of those who oppose this kind of development. So who had your ear?
So for these kind of things, again, the Planning and Zoning Committee, so the council committee is five. It's Kevin Cullen, Nicole Coleman, Danny DeLong, Brad Wagner, and myself. And we, the administration asked, in this case, it was Matt Cordani asking as well, what did we want to proceed? Did we want something with more open language? Did we want something with more restrictive language? And we asked for kind of between a middle and a restrictive language to start with, like as a base framework, and then it just went back and forth. So it's just a matter of conversation and then us doing research on our own. I expect that most of council does their research on projects. It digs into what the truth of the matter is and understands something fully before they make a decision.
Earlier this month, it was reported that Washington Township took the lead in implementing zoning regulations that would apply to data centers in their jurisdiction. And for reference, for those who don't all know, that's northeastern Hancock County. Were those rules used as something of a template in putting together a proposal for what the city should do?
And I'm not sure because Matt also helped work on those and he did the one that they wanted was a very restrictive. I was actually thankful for that one going through. When we had initially looked at this, I think in the July version, there was some questioning about groundwater usage that was listed, that it could be used with a certain degree. And I questioned that and I got a little bit of a pushback. But then watching what Matt did for Washington Township actually opened up the door because they restricted it. You can't use groundwater at all. So we were able to put that restriction in ours as well, knowing that language had been approved and gone forward.
What all is included? You've touched on a couple of things that are part of this framework. As we mentioned, certainly not finalized at this point, but give us some of the highlights. And I know this is also very complicated and very involved, so we don't have a time to obviously go through point by point, but hit some of the highlights as to what this includes.
The noise decibel level is a big one. Distance between from any school or hospital or residential has to be 1,000 feet. So you're talking football fields of length. We've got a big a distance happening. That's a big one. Height of the buildings, the size of the buildings, the distance between them. We've got all of those things. It has to have proper landscaping. It has to look like a part of the community building. It can't be something that looks like a plain warehouse. Aesthetically, it has to fit in. So I think some of those setbacks, they can't use groundwater usage. Those things are a big deal. If you do industrial uses, a lot of industrial users have water requirements. I think that's a big deal for people. So making sure that these don't exceed any typical industrial user, like what Whirlpool uses or Cooper, like any of those kind of industrial usages, use some kind of water. So making restrictions on that and what's allowed.
As we mentioned, the next step is to present this to the full council, which we understand will happen on Tuesday. And again, just to be clear, talk about what happens next, those next steps in this process.
On Tuesday, when it's before council, it's just going to be referred back to Planning Commission and back to Planning and Zoning Committee.
So kind of a formality there.
Yeah, it's a formality. It's going to be referred back to us again. And then Planning Commission is going to have to take it up on their schedule and Planning and Zoning Committee will have to get it on their schedule as well. And then we'll look at the finalized language that we've asked to be presented on Tuesday. That's what's going to be on Tuesday is the finalized language. We're going to refer it back and then we're going to discuss it. We're going to vote on whether we think more changes need to be made or as is, have we had it changed as good. And then we'll recommend it go to council again or not recommend it go to council again, depending on where that went.
And is there a goal for a target timeline for all of this?
The timeline is just to get it through and done. We have a moratorium, but you don't want to let it sit there and not happen because if it gets forgotten, we could be in trouble. We don't want to miss it by a day or a week, and then we've opened ourselves up to a lawsuit.
Again, Zoning and Planning Committee Chair Heather Kensinger with us this morning on this framework for data center zoning policy. Obviously something the community is watching very closely and will continue to follow the story. Heather, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you.
You You know, the America 250 celebration did not end on July 4th. It is a year-long celebration of American history and the things that make our country great. The month of August has been designated Ohio Goes to the Fair Month, and Olivia Wapum from America 250 Ohio is with us this morning. Olivia, this is certainly a treasured, time-honored tradition in the Buckeye State, for sure.
That's right. Yeah, we are so happy to celebrate this theme of Ohio Goes to the Fair, and to celebrate for the rest of the year, this monumental year of America 250.
And obviously the Ohio State Fair is going on right now, and America 250, I understand, has a pretty prominent place at the State Fair. Tell us about your involvement there.
Yes. America 250 is at the Ohio State Fair this year. The theme is America's Big Birthday. And so we have a big presence there. And we're in the Lausche Building, where people can come and visit our team and come celebrate America 250 Ohio. And we have a presence all throughout the fair. This year, even the Butter Cow has an America 250 Ohio theme.
Yeah, very cool. But again, it is not just about the state fair. It's about the county fairs as well. To give people an idea, I always think this is funny. We actually have more county fairs or county fair-like events through the year than we have counties in Ohio. So, I mean, clearly a tradition worth celebrating.
That's right. The county fair is a tradition worth celebrating. We see that the county fairs is one of those events that brings together people from across not only, you know, different communities, but different county lines, people visiting counties in the counties adjacent to them.
Yeah.
Because of all of the great attractions that they have and the community pride. So county fairs are something that makes Ohio really, really special.
And I think, again, as we talk about the theme of celebrating our shared history on this 250th anniversary, this is something that certainly ties us to the past, because these are events, whether we're talking about the state fair, certainly the county fairs, in most cases, these have been going on for more than a century.
That's right. There's a deep-rooted history of the fair. And that's something that people can experience when you go to these fairs. Often that they have the historical societies are deeply involved to give people a nice history of their county fairs, but also fairs in general across Ohio.
And again, with the theme of celebrating what makes our communities great, that is exactly what the fair does on a county and community level. And beyond, again, the formal fairs that we think about, the county fairs and so on, just about every community has a festival of some kind to celebrate what makes our communities special and unique. And here again, that fits in perfectly with what America 250 is meant to celebrate.
Absolutely. We are looking forward to the Hancock County Fair, which is coming up not this month, but in September.
Sure.
And also the fairs that are happening around Findlay in the Findlay area.
Yeah. And yes, we are still allowed to celebrate, even though we won't be in August. It's still fine to celebrate.
And that's now, still fun. Yeah.
as you mentioned, the celebration of our 250th birthday is going to continue through the rest of the year. Talk a little bit about some of the months, the rest of the year, and what we are celebrating to kind of lay this out, because there are some really cool things still to come this year.
Yeah. So every month this year for America 250 Ohio has a theme. And so this month's theme being the Ohio State Fair and County Fairs. Mm-hmm. In September, we'll see a theme of sports and wellness. So celebrating all things of Ohio sports.
Right in time for football season.
Exactly right. October, we're switching the focus to agriculture. So we're focusing on food and farms. And there's lots of fun to be had in the October month for food and farms. Mm-hmm. Different ag venture programs.
Right.
So things that you can go do, corn mazes and apple picking and you know, pumpkin picking and those kinds of things.
And of course, it's harvest season, so it fits in, you know, really nicely. Again, Ohio's top industry remains agriculture. And then from there, you go into November when we think about Veterans Day and the salute to service.
Exactly. November, the focus is veterans and first responders and honoring kind of our first line veterans and heroes. And that's our main focus.
Then in December, this is kind of an opportunity to look forward. I really like the way we're wrapping this up here.
That's right. December, so wrapping up the year, we are going to end on a note of looking forward. So the theme is Future Ohio, and getting together with different leaders from around the state and also the younger generation to talk about education and the future of where Ohio is headed in the next 10, 15, 20, 50 years.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting you mentioned that, because one of the things that struck me on July 4th when we were celebrating with our family, I remember back to the bicentennial in 1976 when I was like 8 years old. My granddaughter is turning 8 this year. And I thought to myself, you know, I may not be around for the tricentennial, but she will be. And, you know, this was, you can't help but think forward to what it may be, you know, 50 years from now when we're celebrating that observance.
Exactly. We really can't even imagine. A lot of people who are remembering, yeah, the 1976 bicentennial, we look back and we remember that time. And so we think about in the next 50 years, they're going to be looking back on today's celebration, everything that we did today.
Yeah.
We can't even imagine what kind of celebration we're going to have then. But it's important to know that the kids today are going to see that celebration and they're going to remember today.
Yeah. And along those same lines, let me ask you, because you've been very much involved in this all year long, as we begin to kind of wind down this year-long celebration, again, lots to celebrate in the months ahead, but we're getting toward the tail end of this now. What do you hope that people will take away from this America 250 celebration? What is the lasting legacy that you hope comes out of this?
Lasting legacy that I hope people take away from this is the major contributions that Ohio has had on our nation's story. So there's so many ways that Ohio and Ohioans have impacted the way that our nation has progressed in ways of like innovation and travel and making those advancements and just furthering the American story in a very important and impactful way. So I hope people come away with a sense of pride in their community and also a sense of pride in the state.
And again, this is the perfect month to really focus on that. Ohio Goes to the Fair month, part of the America 250 Ohio celebration in August. And again, Olivia Wapum is with us from America 250 Ohio. You actually have a website where folks can learn more about all of the celebrations that are yet to come.
That's right. So anyone who's interested in all of the celebrations that we have yet for the rest of this year can go to America250-Ohio.org. We have a full list of events, a full calendar, so people can see what's going on near them and what's in store for the rest of this year.
Olivia, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
A fisherman in Washington state has been arrested after allegedly dragging federally protected sharks out of the water to pose with them for social media content. This strikes me as a very bad idea on a number of levels. Connor Seifert faces 9 counts of unlawful fishing and one gross misdemeanor following a months-long investigation by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, which received numerous complaints about this activity. Lieutenant Kit Rosenberger of the Department of Fish and Wildlife says investigators found Mr. Seifert targeted certain sharks, caught and mishandled them, dragged them out of the water, and wrestled with them. You know, eventually, I'm thinking this is a problem that might take care of itself. You know what I mean? This is not going to end well one way or the other for this guy. Officers arrested Mr. Seifert at a pier at South Puget Sound. But last month, he also faces a charge of allegedly lying to officers about what he was doing. But he was posting it on social media. So, I mean, the evidence is right there. Not the sharpest shark in the water there. It's a whole different kind of shark tank right there. How crazy is this? The Pokemon Company is deploying facial recognition technology at 5 Pokemon card store locations across Japan to crack down on scalping. Scalping Pokemon cards. Apparently, customers of elementary school age and older now must undergo a facial scan before entering. You got elementary school kids who are scalping the Pokemon cards. The technology, they say, ensures that each shopper only enters the store once per day. Any repeat attempts are denied entry. The company said the scans aim to provide a safe and secure shopping environment and ensure compliance with purchase rules. Scalping apparently has long plagued the Pokemon trading card community, with resellers bulk buying limited releases and then reselling them at significant markups. Who knew? I had no idea that this was such a huge problem, scalping Pokemon cards. All right. And finally, in the broken news this morning, is a sweet story. A library in Wales has received 2 books that were returned by the grandson of the man who originally borrowed them more than a century ago. Conwy Library in Wales announced on social media that a Mr. O'Sullivan visited the library to return the books that his grandfather, Walter Griffith Owen, had checked out in 1910. Man, I've heard about being late, but 1910. Apparently, Mr. Owen had served in both World Wars and was stationed in the region during World War II. Library staff welcomed the long overdue return with enthusiasm. Our staff are so excited to handle the books and to meet Mr. O'Sullivan for a photograph and be involved in their family story. No word on what the fine was for books that are returned 116 years after they're due. I would think that those fines would be waived, but 116 years. I mean, I've heard of overdue library books, but that's ridiculous. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You're invited to the Night Jazz Concert to benefit Flag City Honor Flight Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 till 7:30 at 50 North, located at 339 East Melrose in Findlay. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted. Come out for food, raffles, music, and fun Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 to 7:30 at 50 North as Night Jazz performs to benefit Flag City Honor Flight. Doors open at 3:30. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Mom and Dad, get ready. A new survey of 2,000 U.S. adults finds that the average parent spends 38 minutes a day driving their kids to and from their school activities. We're getting into back to school season now, so this is going to be a thing again. 38 minutes a day. Now, you do the math. And the school year generally is 180 days, right? So you do the math, and with the exact total of the number of minutes, it's right around 38, but it totals out to 6,858 minutes in each school year that we spend shuttling our kids back and forth. That is nearly 15 8-hour workdays. So basically three full work weeks that we spend, the equivalent of three work weeks, just shuttling our kids back and forth for their activities over the course of one school year. And over their 12 years in school, that equals 180 days, or a full school year that we spend in their entire school career getting them to and from all of the things that they need to be taken to and from. So it's no surprise that 77% of parents say back to school season makes life more hectic. No kidding. 52% say the biggest challenge is balancing their children's schedules with their own personal commitments. That's the thing that causes the most household friction. Other challenges parents face, 42% say adjusting to the new school year routine is a challenge. 41% cite planning and preparing family meals during the week. Yeah. And with those changes come compromises. 49% of parents say they sacrifice their own personal time and their own hobbies, their own interests, in order to get the kids where they need to be. 49% will sacrifice their own enjoyment. And 40% sacrifice their sleep to make everything fit together during the back-to-school season. So get ready, because it's coming. It's just a couple of weeks away. And I have to tell you, in looking at, you know, some of this data here, as empty nesters are, so now that our kids are beyond that age, you know, well out of school, we don't have to worry about this anymore. There are a lot of things about your kids getting to that age where they graduate school that are bittersweet. This is not one of them. This is not one of those things that you miss about your kids being that age, for sure. Hey, I want to mention something really quickly before we finish, because I saw this the other day and meant to mention this. The big boy is back home. The big steam engine, Union Pacific's big boy number 4014, returned to its steam shop in Cheyenne, Wyoming, yesterday, day before yesterday, I think, following a historic, this is what they posted online, following a historic 93-day coast-to-coast tour celebrating America 250.
Wow.
Visiting communities from Sacramento to Philadelphia, making more than 75 whistle stops and 16 display day appearances, of course, including Fosteria, yep, as we know, twice, on the way there Finley. And on the way back. Went through, Finley area as well. And it was continental, and it was really cool. To every person who waved, photographed, cheered, and shared the experience, thank you for helping make this tour one to remember.
That's cool.
Yeah, really, really cool. So the big boy is home. We didn't get a chance to see it.
No,
we're not able to get out there to see that. So no. I guess now we just have to go visit Cheyenne, Wyoming.
There we go. Let's go to Wyoming.
There we go. My wife Kyra has joined us in the studio this morning. She's got another collection of recipes, and featuring zucchini recipes, because this is zucchini season.
Yes,
a lot of people got zucchini coming out of the garden right about now.
Coming out of their ears.
Yeah, and so this is a way to use all of that. Some really creative ways of using those zucchini from the garden, starting with a zucchini pizza. Or pizza casserole, actually. But this is kind of a pizza.
Yeah, sort of, but
thing.
Yeah. So this, for the crust, it's 4 cups of zucchini grated, 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 large eggs, 1/2 cup of Parmesan cheese grated, And then for the toppings, it's 1 cup of mozzarella cheese shredded, 1 cup of cheddar cheese shredded, 1 pound of ground beef, half a cup of chopped onion, 1 cup pizza sauce, 1 cup green bell peppers chopped, 10 pepperoni slices cut, 1 teaspoon dried basil, 1 teaspoon garlic powder, and pepper to taste. So preheat your oven to 400 degrees. Grease a 9x13-inch casserole dish. Grate zucchini, mix with salt, and let sit for 10 minutes to draw out the moisture. Squeeze out excess moisture from the zucchini using a clean kitchen towel. Mix drained zucchini with beaten eggs, Parmesan cheese, mozzarella cheese until well combined. And that's a half a cup of the mozzarella cheese I put in there with mine. And I ended up using my iron skillet. So,
press so it was, the zucchini. It was kind of pizza-like.
Yes,
mine
was pizza-like. Yeah. So that's kind of why Chris said that. So press the zucchini mixture into the greased dish and bake for 20 minutes. Cook your ground beef and onions in a skillet. What I did was cooked my ground beef and stuff and then took that out of my iron skillet, then kept some of that, a little bit of that grease in there, put my Parmesan crust on there, and baked it in the oven. Uh-huh. So that was my little twist on it. And then while that's baking, stir in your pizza sauce, your bell peppers, your pepperoni, basil, garlic powder, and black pepper to your browned beef and onions. And then let that simmer for 5 minutes while your crust finishes cooking. Layer the beef mixture over the zucchini crust. Add some more mozzarella cheese, your cheddar cheese on top. Bake another 20 minutes and cheese is bubbly and golden. Cool for 5 to 10 minutes. I think I went closer to the 10 minutes to just make sure it was cuttable and firm. So, and then before slicing and and then enjoy.
It's a good point. It's cooling, not just to allow it to cool down, but so that it can firm up just a little bit. Because it's not going to be your typical pizza crust there.
No, it's not.
Let's see here. I have a recipe for zucchini garlic bites.
Yes. So this is 1 cup of shredded zucchini drained well, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1/3 cup of breadcrumbs, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 1 large egg, 1 tablespoon of dried chives, 1/2 tablespoon of dried parsley, 1/2 teaspoon of dried basil, 1/2 teaspoon of dried oregano, salt and pepper to taste, and marinara sauce for dipping if you want it. So prepare the oven to 400 degrees. Lightly coat a baking sheet with olive oil or your nonstick cooking spray. Set aside. Use a box grater to grate up the zucchini and then put into a clean towel. Roll up the towel and twist to get that extra moisture out. Add the shredded zucchini, garlic, egg, breadcrumbs, Parmesan cheese, chives, parsley, basil, oregano, salt and pepper to a medium bowl. Mix well to combine. Shape mixture into 1-inch size balls and place on a baking sheet. Bake for 15 to 18 minutes in the prepared oven until golden brown, and serve warm with your marinara sauce.
So kind of a twist on like zucchini bread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but like in little balls and bite
garlic.
Size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With garlic.
Yep.
Zucchini garlic bread.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of cool. And then for dessert, and this is yummy. I had a little bit of this earlier. If on the air a little bit earlier, I was kind of trying to talk, is because I was enjoying the chocolate chip zucchini bars.
Yes. So this is 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/2 cup of butter melted, 3/4 cup of packed brown sugar, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 1 large egg, 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1 1/2 cups of finely shredded zucchini squeezed dry, and 1 cup of semi-chocolate chips. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Grease a 9x13-inch baking dish in a medium bowl. Whisk together the flour, baking soda, salt, and cinnamon. Set that aside. In a large bowl, combine the melted butter with your brown sugar and your granulated sugars. Stir until smooth. Add in the egg and the vanilla and mix until well combined. Fold in the wet to the or I'm sorry, fold in the shredded squeezed zucchini. It's going to be a little lumpy. That's fine. It still tastes good. Add your dry ingredients to the wet, stirring until just combined. Don't overmix this. Stir in your chocolate chips. And that's optional. You don't have to if you don't want to do chocolate chips.
Oh, but you want to.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's, you it want really to. Does. It's good.
You really
it,
want
it
to.
It is optional, but I liked it. I did my chocolate chunks that I have that I get from Aldi's.
I was just thinking, though. I mean, you could do like peanut butter chunks.
Oh, yeah. You could.
Maybe
try that.
Would be,
or butterscotch.
Butterscotch. Yeah, butterscotch would be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
there are all kinds of varieties.
Combination of all of them, you know. So
you could do that too. The more the merrier.
Yes. So spread the batter evenly into your prepared pan. Bake for 20 to 25 minutes or until a toothpick insert into the center comes out mostly clean. Cool completely in the pan before cutting into bars and enjoy.
There you go. Yep. The recipes for the zucchini pizza casserole, the zucchini garlic bites, and the chocolate chip zucchini bars. If you don't use the chocolate chips, they can't be chocolate chip zucchini bars.
No, they can't, but it's optional. So,
just saying.
If you don't like chocolate chips, you know, if you're that person.
If you don't like chocolate chips, we can't be friends. No. I'm sorry. We can't. Those recipes posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN on Facebook. And we have it linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, which is goodmornings.net. And again, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two at some point to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for that. Coming up next time on the program, to start the week, a heartfelt Monday motivation from a parent dealing with a tragic loss and learning how to live with grief, not in grief. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend, and we'll catch you back here next week.